Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's beat, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far. You need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, Mr. Big Jay Oakerson. Jay, are you smoking a cigarette right now?
No, not in the house ever.
Is that what that is? I thought, first of all, I didn't think you smoked at all anymore. Is that a cigarette? No, it's not a cigarette.
No.
Oh, okay.
A joint.
Just a well-rolled joint.
Relax, Grandpa.
I got worried. I was worried that you were back to smoking cigarettes. I don't want to see that.
I still smoke cigarettes.
I don't see you smoking anymore ever. I don't see you too much anymore.
Yeah.
Jay, that wood piece behind you, I used to have that same piece in my house. Is it like a three-piece wood?
Yeah, it's like a four-piece panel.
Four-piece panel. I used to have that exact piece in my house.
My girlfriend makes sure our house has yoga studio energy for some reason.
Nice.
Well, that brings me right to the man of the hour. Of course, is Mr. Gilby Clark is on the show. Thank you so much for joining us, buddy.
Ralph, always happy to be here, man. Good for
you. Jay, I'm going to tell you this. You came in a little bit late. I do think that Gilby genuinely remembers me. I could be wrong, but I feel like he genuinely remembers me.
Maybe.
I think he does. Because also, by the way, because he said Ralph, and immediately I thought, oh, he knows me. But I'm like, no, wait a minute. My name is on the fucking screen. It doesn't necessarily mean that he knows me.
You know, it's funny. I see Gilby's face a decent amount when I go back and watch, when I watch the Rockstar Supernova performance of, well, I became good friends with, through Shiprocked and a number of things with Lucas Ross.
Yeah, he has a man crush on Lucas.
And Lucas, I always watched the Rebel Yell, when he did Rebel Yell the first time on the show, which I thought was so awesome. And for that reason, me and Lucas together did a Comedy Central show called The Goddamn Comedy Jam. And we sang that song together on TV. So that's
He was he's so talented. I mean, he's still talented. He still sings his ass off.
You know, I mean, let's jump into that one right away. That wasn't where I was going to start, but let's get into that. So originally, you auditioned to be the house band for season one, and then ended up being the band for season two. Am I right on that?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, the first season, they wanted to have like an all-star band. So, you know, they asked a couple guys around town, you know, put some bands together and come see us. And the band that I auditioned with was myself and Ryan Roxy from Alice Cooper's band on guitar. Dizzy Reed played keyboards, and Johnny Colt and Steve Gorman from the Black Crowes were the drummer. It was a really good band. And we auditioned, and they kept asking us to play songs over and over, like even songs we didn't know. And they kept like huddling up like in between. And then they came to us afterwards. They said, thank you. They called me a couple of days later, and they said, we decided not to go with, an all-star band. We're going to go with more of like a studio band. But we want to talk to you about something. And that's how that kind of developed, you know.
That's pretty wild. You know, what's funny is that it's such an embarrassing story, but so this goes pre-internet, before you could look things up and realize they're not true, right? I used to do whatever I could to try and have sex with women, which I still do to this day. But I wouldn't tell people. The way we worked it out was my brother would go to a club or go to a bar and say, hey, I'm with Johnny Colt from the Black Crowes. Because people know the name.
Yeah.
They don't know what he looked like. And I had long hair. I was really thin. And they just said, oh, looks like it could be him.
Ralph.
Yes.
Don't tell this story to people, man.
Yeah.
This is a horrible story to tell people.
I was 20 years old.
Ralph, these are Me Too times, man. You can't trick a woman's like, oh, I just had sex with Elvis Costello, I think. Yeah. I don't know who he said he was.
I never used it for that purpose, but to get into venues, we would do it. That was a standard line for me.
What do you tell people now? You go, hey, just so you know, Peter Boyle's ghost is coming.
That is not nice, Jay. You hurt my feelings.
Well, it was more of a young Frankenstein.
So just quickly to put a button on that, How did you get the rest of the band? Like, how was it chosen that it was Jason Newsted, that it was Tommy Lee? Like, how did that come about? Was that on you? Was that on them?
Yeah, a little bit, yes and no. So I came to them with, you know, they said, look, put your favorite band together. Give me like an A, B, and C list. So I did. And Tommy and Jason both weren't on it, by the way. And in the process of doing that, Tommy Lee ran into Mark Burnett, the producer, like at a baseball game for their kids out in Malibu. And Mark was telling Tommy about the what we're doing. And, you know, Tommy being the excited gentleman he is, he goes, I want to do it. So when Tommy came aboard, it just kind of changed the vibe, you know. And the first thing Tommy said is, where's Jason Newsted on this list? Like, that was first thing he said. And we called Jason, and he was in. It actually came together kind of organically and quickly. So, once Tommy came aboard, it changed.
What a great story, by the way, is Mark Burnett. I think Mark Burnett was just a Howard Stern intern at one point.
Really?
He's going to make all those reality things. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now every one of those successful ones, from Survivor to Trump Show, all were his shows, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure he has some very, very unflattering audio and video of Trump somewhere that might see the light of day one day. Who knows?
Well, isn't a girl, Holly Robinson from 21 Jump Street, says that that he was laying N-bombs on her.
Really?
Yeah,
she's on camera. So they must have he must have done a great non-disclosure or something with him. I don't know how that hasn't surfaced.
It's not hard to find an embarrassing situation with him.
Ralph, I'm actually glad to see you inside today and not protesting that the election was rigged.
I just do it through Zoom. That's how I get in on
Alt-right Ralph? I call you Alt-Ralph.
Yeah, A-R-R? That's my nickname. Did you just do one tour with Rockstar Supernova?
It was interesting. Yes, it was one tour. You know what we call one cycle. We did a record, we did a tour, but we did a U.S. tour, we did a Canadian tour, Australian tour, New Zealand, and you know, some of them were good. In the States, it was hit and miss, you know, like the weird cities were really strong, and then cities you'd think that'd be strong weren't. But Canada, they were sold out, and in Australia, everything was sold out. It was insane.
Yeah, I saw a couple of the shows here in the States. I mean, I remember that time quite well. And you're saying here that Jay fell in love with the Billy Idol performance. And I was watching you where you said that Billy Idol was one of your big influences, and you kind of wanted to be in a punk band, but you liked having long hair more than you did to be in a punk
band. That's true. I was one of those guys early on where, like I said, I love punk rock. I had an English girlfriend when I was really young, and where, you know, I was going down, you know, I'd like Rush and Kiss and Alice Cooper and Aerosmith, and she turned me on to The Clash. And like I said, this is like late 70s, and that just... Man, I made an about face, and I'd like bands like Elvis Costello, The Pretenders, things that were happening at that time. But I did notice all those bands all had short hair, and I couldn't do it. It took so long to get that Italian mane. You know, I just couldn't do it.
Someone was just telling me that recently, that it's such a loyalist community, the punk and the blues communities, that if you're not a purist in that field as a musician, they don't welcome you in.
Absolutely. You know, it was very much, I mean, oddly enough, in those years, you know, like I said, if you had long hair, you know, you were not in a punk rock band or even welcome at a punk rock show. Of course, those days have changed, you know, over the years. Stuff. There are a lot of, you know, guys in Bad Religion have long hair and stuff. So it's changed.
Yeah. And you had Jay, I'm sorry.
I was going to ask, I should ask this more when we have musicians on. I'm always curious to know this because I had this conversation recently about me. People always think just because of the tours that I've done I've done comedy in front of like Rob Zombie and Korn on Mayhem Fest. I've done like a Shiprock. So I'm very, and I have tattoos and piercings. So I'm very like synonymous in a lot of ways, or at least like tied to metal.
Yeah.
And I'm a big metal and hard rock fan, but I'm always like curious as musicians too. I have my music taste for the most part, especially being 43 now, I have my metal days or my metal moments and hard rock, but I mean, I listen to legitimately yacht rock playlists more than anything. And I'm curious, like your listening habits as like a, you know, a rock star, it's not just rock, I assume, all the time. Right?
Absolutely what, not. What absolutely people, not.
What's like, I always said the gambit of my iPod that would throw people off. It's like, I'd always say I have everything from Marilyn Manson to Barbra Streisand. Like what's like, What's like the wackiest like genre?
What's the wackiest stuff? Well, you know, I ride motorcycles a lot, Jay. So I get a lot of times where, you know, I go on rides for days. And nowadays I have one of those Bluetooth helmets where I have my music like piped in so I can have my phone on it. And I just, you know, switch and stuff. So like I literally will listen to records and things like that on trips. Oh, nice. So, yeah, it's interesting, like what I go through, like, you know, I'll start with like the Aerosmith Pandora box set, you know, and then like I said, I'll get into Elvis Costello. Like I love Elvis Costello. I think he's incredible. He's a great songwriter, you know, and then obviously recently Van Halen, you know, you go into Van Halen. I played with Nancy Sinatra for 5 years and I made two records with her. So like, I love Nancy Sinatra.
Sure. And that's great. And by the way, I've recently just got a turntable again.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, that's like, it really has brought me back to a time of like, I'll put on a video game and just listen to an album. I haven't done an album.
Yeah.
Since I was like listening to tapes as a kid almost. Yeah. So it's like, we go front to back and you knew every song on an album. And like,
we knew the order. We knew the order. Yeah. Isn't that saying?
It's so cool to go back sort of and do that now.
Yeah. That was the cool thing that Prince did. I forget which album it was, but he put it out on CD and he was annoyed that people would just go through tracks to play the favorite tracks. So he made one, it made the whole album was just one track.
Yeah, continue
to it. So that was the way, because nowadays it's all singles for sure. In fact, so much so that you've already, with the new album, The Gospel Truth, you've been just releasing singles because that's the way it's done these days, right?
Yeah. You know, that's just something that I have found out about it, because I can be a little bit out of touch with, you know, the business mechanics and how things work. You know, when I go to make a record, I make a record, you know, at least 10 original songs. And that's all I care about. When it gets to the business part, I try to leave it in the hands of the professionals. But yeah, they told me it's singles now. So yeah, we put out 3 singles and the record's still not due until next year. So, you know, that's just the way it is.
Wild. It's a 180 of how it used to be done for sure.
Yeah.
Are you big on social media, Gilby?
Yes and no. I'm terrible at Facebook. I love Instagram. I'm actually active on my Instagram, which I link to my Twitter. I never look at my Twitter, but I love Instagram. But yeah, the Facebook thing, I mean, I have pages and all that, but I'm just not good at it.
Well, it's interesting because by the time I've been doing comedy for 21 years, so by the time I got fans, like legitimate fans, at all, it was already in the time of like how touchable you were as a performer.
Yeah.
Like, what was that like going from like the times of like that? Like, you guys would get, you know, like Guns N' Roses, but, you know, getting like escorted to places and you just weren't like as touchable unless you wanted to be. Like, now it's like, you know, every day I go on the thing and someone's like, what a piece of shit to say that horrible joke and thing like that. You know, and it gets to me. It actually makes it to me, and you're like, all right, guy, what's like, you, I shouldn't be able to hear you say that.
Yeah, well, I actually have friends, like I'm pretty good friends with Tommy Davidson, you know, the comic.
Sure, yeah. And
one thing I used to say about Tommy, we actually were neighbors, so I saw him all the time, whether Thanksgiving or just hanging out in the yard, and I used to always say Tommy was always on. Like, he was always entertaining. He was always like, everything was funny and he was always like on. And I used to say, God, it must be exhausting being you, because with us, we just have to be great when we're on stage or, you know, when we have our interviews and things like that. Like, we get our downtime. But that is what has changed about now, is with everybody with cameras, you know, from the time you show up in a town, people have cameras and you're on now. So it has changed our lifestyle. Like, we have to be careful. You know, we have to watch. You know, we can't really always say what we want to say because, you know, everybody's held so accountable now, and everybody's so sensitive now too, where us musicians are not the best at being, you know.
You know, it's funny, Gilly, because Jay brings up the social media. When you left Kill for Thrill to join GNR, I'm sure most people didn't know. Like, how would they? You know, so did you just show up? Like, how did that transition? First of all, how did it even happen? You know, like, you do, and I know you've been on my show a few times. I never even asked you that. But like, how did that transition happen from a smaller band? I mean, you had a few albums, but to go from to Guns N' Roses, did Axl call you? Like, how did that happen?
Well, I'll tell two quick ones. One of them is I got the gig because Slash actually called me. You know, they had when Izzy left the band, they were really worried about finding a guitar player to fit that mold, because Slash was already established as the lead guitar player. They needed somebody that could do, you know, what what Izzy did, which was hard. So it was a short list, but it was a hard list. Like Ron Wood was on that list, you know? So Slash called me. I mean, obviously I said yes. I came down the next day. I jammed with them. I came down a couple more days and they didn't say a word. We just literally played a few songs. And this is the truest story ever. He called me on a Monday, and by the next Monday, I literally was watching TV, like MTV, which was always on in our apartment, but the sound was never on. Just the TV was on. And I was on the phone with my friend and I looked up and I saw my picture on MTV, which was the news. I swear it's a true story. And I look up and I caught it at the end of it and stuff. And it was announcing who the new guitar player of GNR was. And literally the next phone call beeping through was Slash telling me that I got the gig and we're leaving next week.
That's crazy. In a very loosely related story, I watched the first guy to get COVID in the United States. They sent his blood out, but he found out that he tested positive by watching the news because they said the first case tested positive and it was him. And he didn't. It's like, what the? That's how we found out. That's crazy.
Is that insane? See, it does happen.
It still happens. That's crazy.
Ralph, did he live is the question.
He did live. Yes.
Oh, thank God.
And so then one of the things I read that was really, I thought, endearing and shows that you are a nice boy, that you weren't part of the Guns N' Roses reunion because you went to see your daughter playing her band instead.
Yeah, that is true. They had asked me, they didn't ask me to join the band. They asked me to come out and do one of the appearances with the band.
Tour. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just happened to be the day that I was in Chicago with my daughter. Her band was playing Lollapalooza, and I'm actually her roadie when she plays shows. So I don't think anybody would know how to tune the guitars if I wasn't there, but I'm just kidding. But yeah, they called. It's just bad timing. And I just said, look, I think it's a great idea. I'm up for it. I just can't do it today. And they literally asked me that day, and I never heard back from them after I said
that's wild. And also the fact that I read you had like a week or something to learn the entire Guns catalog when you joined the band. That's insane.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. They called, like I said, he told me on a Monday that you have the gig, and the next week we were flying to Boston for our first show. And I literally had a week. And remember, this is before YouTube, where I was glued to their records, you know, with headphones on, trying to learn the catalog. And the last song I learned was a song called Estrange, which is a really long ballad piece. And I just, if you listen to it, it's kind of one-dimensional guitar-wise. It's really just feature Slash. So I was listening to it, and I really couldn't really figure out what I should do in that song. So I went to Dizzy. I go, hey, man, can you sit down with me and let's work on Estrange? I go, I just want to kind of figure it out. And he goes, oh, well, here's the music book. And he handed me the music book, and I went, there's a music book? I just spent a week like learning every note by ear when I could have just grabbed a friggin' music book. And I mean, I read charts. It would have taken me, you know, an hour.
So, that's crazy.
I was a little pissed off that, number one, I didn't ask.
You know, right, but that's crazy.
And also, could have offered it to me.
Back then, Axl would just call out songs. There was no set list. That's just
no set list. Yeah, I had to learn every song in the catalog because you literally did not know what he was going to call out that night. And also, if you've ever heard Axl's speaking voice, he speaks in a very low, quiet tone. You know, even though he sings in that high pitch, he speaks in a low tone. And live on stage, you know, our amps were so loud. I mean, the hiss was unbearable. And he would walk up to whoever started the song. And like, you know, for me, I would start Don't Cry. And so he'd walk up to me, Don't Cry. And I go into it. But sometimes I go, did he say You Could Be Mine? Like, I literally couldn't hear him. I was like kind of guessing which one it was. And God forbid, so you start the wrong song, even though he did have a funny spirit about him. Like he would think it's funny if I did start the wrong song. But
that's great. That's amazing. And just the thought of going from, I mean, Kill for Thrills was a club band.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then going to arenas a week later, it's just hard to wrap your head around. It's just so crazy. It's insane.
I was lucky in the sense that because I had to learn that set so quickly, all I cared about was learning the songs and playing and not having cheat sheets up there. Like I wanted to be able to play it, you know, how it with the confidence that Izzy had up there. So I really wasn't thinking about, you know, the 25,000 people in the audience. I was really thinking about making sure Slash and Axl didn't hear me play wrong notes.
You know, I was going to just say, I went through a whole series of different emotions in my head. I was going to say that immediate upgrade in pussy quantity and quality was probably insane. But then also I'm wondering, when you're a club band, you're actually, again, at that moment, much more
accessible,
like accessible to people that would want to fuck you. When you're in arenas, man, a lot of times, especially if the band, I know some of the bands get off stage, and I mean, they are beeline for the bus, and the party's kind of over.
Well, GNR had that great thing because they were always late on stage. So they used to do this thing of they had cameras focused on the audience, and the girls were always, you know, flipping their tops off, and it would entertain the audience, you know, when GNR was like an hour late and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, people would go around and girls would flip their shirts off. But what was funny is what you didn't really see is when they did that, there was one of our crew members putting a backstage pass on it, because we were backstage watching the same TV go, no, the blonde one.
Yeah, I'm sure.
No, not that one, that one.
I really like the idea of you guys reviewing the tapes before you go on stage. Like, oh, let's just see. I was a C-section. We're in the third row. That's the girl you got to get.
That's the one, yeah. I've got a lot of time on our hands.
And also, you just to put a little button on Guns, was that, you know, as a fan, it was amazing from a fan's perspective. You fit in pretty seamlessly. Like, no one looked at you as the new guy that long. Like, for some reason, you're such a rock and roll guy that it just felt like you were part of it. Like, oh, he was just, wasn't he like always there? Like, it just kind of like you had, did you feel that way from a band perspective as well?
Yes and no. I mean, the guys really were great about that. I mean, I think the cool thing is, what was odd was I knew everybody pretty much in the band. I mean, I can't say I knew him well. We weren't best friends, but I was already in a successful local band that was headlining, you know, the biggest venues in LA. So in a weird way, some of them, you know, like looked up to me in that sense. So it was kind of strange. Like, they were great around me. They never once told me what to say, what to play, what to wear, anything. And so they made me feel comfortable, which I guess I showed that I felt comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Jay, it looks like I said something that made you laugh or something you thought of.
What made me laugh was thinking about you were there also, particularly at the time when there was like dissension going on in the group, and you're like the new guy in that. So that's got to be awkward. And again, the song's Unusual, especially like a Strange, is such a great example of a song. I liked them always as a fan, but like, you know, some people have come around to it now because it was such a change from Appetite. But what's funny, the description, I forget what documentary it was, but somebody, I don't know if it was Slash or Duff, it was just, everyone was like, yeah, we were playing like Mr. Brownstone, and now it's like, this motherfucker's swimming with dolphins. Like a string section. Like, what's that? Like those guys were still kind of like, you know, like jeans, t-shirts guys going, what the fuck is that? What is this? Who are all these people behind us?
Well, yeah, I mean, that is true. That is
true. Isn't that why also Izzy departed? Because Izzy still puts out like raw, regular music. He didn't want to be a part of a big production, right? That was the main reason, right?
I mean, I can't answer for Izzy, but I definitely got the feeling that, you know, it had gone in a direction that he just didn't like it anymore. You know, right. He was just done. You know, he was sober. And like you said, you know, the band had background singers and horn players, and, you know, Axel had a vision of how to grow the band into, you know, a modern Rolling Stones at that time, you know. And you're right, the band guys were really down and dirty rock and roll guys. I mean, it's funny, when we traveled, even though we had our own private jet, the guys' suitcases really were like a pillowcase and a bottle of Jack Daniels. And that's how they got on the plane every day, you know, or a guitar case or something. I mean, it really was as real and raw as it could be.
Was John Reese involved at that point?
Absolutely. Reese was our tour manager. Yeah.
I've been on Oddball Tour, but also because of Mayhem Fest, which he was one of the owners of.
Yeah.
I just, man, he's been such a great person to me. And I love his stories of, you know, you guys having to escape Venezuela during riots.
Reese's a good one. He's definitely like, he really kind of took me under his wing, you know, when I first started, because I obviously wasn't used to all that attention and all the crap that goes around it. And he really was there. And I also played golf with Reese and some of the security guys and management guys. So I would be partying with the band all night to 6 a.m. And then I'd get a call at 8 a.m. from Reese. Let's go play golf. I really got to know those guys really well. But yeah, Reese is a great guy. And still, he really hasn't changed at all.
He really, he fought for me hard on that Mayhem Fest. It was quite a gig to go out there and just grab a microphone. I had no intro, really.
Wow. Like,
I grab a microphone and start talking. And most people said, just thought that a roadie grabbed a mic and started insulting them. and then I had to like win them in some way. But man, when he was like around, like, you know, able to at the time, he would come give me like a big intro. Like he made them like, you know, I didn't have to get their attention then. Like he would get them for me, which was very, it was so cool.
He's a real deal. He's a real deal.
Very supportive of an odd idea of having a comic.
So meanwhile, on the news, on the single Tightwad, is it that I rewrite that Nikki Sixx and Stephen Perkins are both on that track?
Yeah. It was really funny when I did that track. I've been talking to Nikki about playing on my records since my first one, Pawn Shop Guitars in 94. Mm-hmm. And it just like never really worked because we're always different parts of the world. So when I started this record, I had this track and I had this idea in my head about the bass. So I called Nikki and Perkins had already cut the drum track. It was me and Perkins together that cut it. And then Nikki came in separately to do the bass track in my place. And once again, this was before COVID. So we were all, you know, hanging out. And man, he had a 59P bass and he nailed it. Like, you know, it's not the Nikki Sixx, you know, on the Motley Crue records where he's going, you know, like he really nailed that part. And I was like, dude, this is so beautiful. You got to get out and do more sessions.
That's cool. All right, before we go any further, this is a longtime sponsor of the show. Shannon, I'm going to rely on you here. Why? I don't do drugs. I'm a puss. We know this. You, I know, love Kratom.
Yeah, especially Yo Kratom. And I spoke to the guys over at Yo Kratom, and they already have an amazing selection of strains and like varieties of ways to like get it into your body. And they have a whole bunch of new stuff coming out very soon. I
have an interesting way to get it into your body, Shannon. Come over later. We'll talk about it. You go to YoKratom.com. They're home of the $60 kilo. You could pay as much as $180 in some other places, but this is high quality wholesale prices direct to you nationwide. Shannon, what's the strain you like again? Like Red Da or something like that?
No. They have Red Mang Da, but they have a proprietary strain called Trainwreck, which is a combination of 11 different strains that only they have.
Well, it's very fitting for you, by the way.
Thank you.
You get it? Because you're a train wreck? You get it, Shannon. All right, so go to YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo, sponsors of the entire Gas Digital Network. We love these guys. All right, let's get back into the show. When you mentioned this a little bit before, you played with Nancy Sinatra, you played with Hart, you were in Slash. Like, when those things come about, how do they come about? Like, how do you end up in a Nancy Sinatra? You know what I mean? Like, how does that happen for you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. And I always say this when I talk to like younger musicians that are trying to work their way up. Every gig that I ever got, a successful gig that I ever got, never came from a manager, an agent, or a lawyer. It came from knowing somebody. You know, it came, like I said, GNR was, I knew Slash, you know, I knew Matt, I knew Izzy. You know, it came from a relationship. With Nancy Sinatra, Don Randy was the keyboard player. If you don't know who Don Randy is, he was in that original band called The Wrecking Crew. They were the ones that played on all those hit records in the 60s. Hal Blaine was on it. Glenn Campbell was part of the Wrecking Crew. They made, you know, all the Monkey records, Nancy Sinatra records. They, you know, they made every hit record that came out of Los Angeles in the 60s. So Don Randy has a club called the Baked Potato. It's a blues and jazz club. And we used to go down on Tuesday nights and do our own little jam nights and just hang out and, you know, smoke cigars and drink whiskey and play blues all night. And I became close with Don. And when Nancy had to do a tour and a record, he goes, "What do you think about playing with Nancy?" And I go, "Don't you think I'm a little loud for Nancy?" He goes, "You know, she likes to have two guitar players. She likes to have like a rock and roll guitar player and one that can cover more of the jazzier stuff." He goes, "I think you'd be great." He goes, "You don't have to change anything." And what was interesting is when I came to play with her, I really played the same guitar and same amp I play with GNR. I play with Nancy Sinatra. I, you know, just obviously changed parts. But Nancy is, you know, everybody knows her for, you know, Boots Are Made for Walking, but man, she really has a great ear. Like we would record in the studio and she would sing with us every take. And like, she would hear, I think that minor is off a little bit. Like she had an incredible ear. But one last thing about Nancy, it was a reading gig, like reading music. And I, you know, I can read, but I'm terrible. I mean, it's not something I exercise all the time. And so when we tried a new song, they would throw the sheet music at you. Go, here's the song we're going to try. And I look at it and it's so old school. It's in pencil. Wow. I mean, I don't know about you, but I can't read pencil for this.
I can't read music. I can't read pencil. I'm old. I can't see anything.
So I would have to like sit there quick 5 minutes and just kind of like chart it out. And a lot of times, you know, they're throwing you chart music for the Do Ron Ron or whatever song that she's covering. You know, it's really not that hard, you know? So it's like, I would just like, you know, give me the key and figure it out. So I'd say half and half, I would read it and half of it, you know, I would just, you know, just play it for what it was.
That's right. And this is now, if I'm not mistaken, when the Gospel Truth comes out next year, it's your 8th solo record, which is crazy to think of since 90, whatever that was. And you've also got very into producing records. You become, I don't know which one is more passionate to you now, but you've been very much an active producer for other bands as well.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you. I like producing. For the longest time, it was a great balance where, you know, during the summer, you can be out touring, and then in the winter, you could be home making records, sitting in my chair, getting fat, and then lose the weight for the tour in the summer. But I like the creative aspect of producing, and I do like working with younger acts that still have a passion for rock and roll and want guitars on the record. So I kind of feel like that's my job, is to kind of give back and, you know, let's keep guitar out there, you know, on some records. And there are some kids that, you know, I'm talking kids in their 20s, you know, that really love rock and roll and they like loud guitars, you know. I just want to do the best I can.
I saw you say somewhere, which I, you know, people say this all the time, and I just don't know if it's true. You believe that music is cyclical and rock will come back. I don't know if rock's ever going to come back as to the level that it was when you were in Guns, when rock dominated the universe. I don't see that ever coming back. Do you really believe
it's really, it's really nowhere right now. I just watched the AMA. I thumbed through the AMAs the other day and it's just like,
I mean, I'd love to say
there doesn't exist.
There was bands that everyone said, oh, they're going to bring back rock. Oh, Buck,
they've actually linked now, even in the awards themselves, it's pop/rock.
Rock, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's
so
crazy.
Yeah. I keep thinking and hoping that there's going to be a band that will reset the universe, but you know, maybe it just had its run. I don't know.
You know,
I don't know.
I look at it like I hope. I also think, I mean, I've kind of lived through it twice. I mean, I remember when bands like Guns N' Roses and Poison and all those and Aerosmith's second time around, rock was dismal at that point. If you remember, man, it was Flock of Seagulls and, you know, it was some really bad rock was dead. I mean, and MTV was strong and it made its way back. I mean, think about the 70s when, like, you know, rock got really progressive and, you know, awful, you know, and then punk rock came in and kind of changed things, you know. So sometimes, you know, you gotta change things up a little bit. I don't know. I hope, but I got to tell you, I live in Los Angeles. I see a lot of good young bands, you know, that, you know, have their own followings that they're playing to a packed 400 seat club playing rock that you've never heard of, you know?
Is there a young band now? Do you try and stay up on rock music? Like, are there younger bands that you like right now?
Well, I try. Like, there's a good local band called Them Evils that are really, really good.
They were on Chiprock. They're great. They're all
So there are bands that are out there. Like, my daughter has a band called Frankie and the Studs, and she just got a record deal. And they're more on the punk rock side of it. But there are a lot of great rock, you know, like I said, local bands that are out there, you know, making a scene.
It's just the young people are all on. It's just internet now, so you have to know how to there's these people know how to become Mark. I just watched that whole Tekashi 6ix9ine documentary the other day, and it's like, guy just made a whole career off knowing how to like pivot everything on social media. So it's a different world, where these bands do find their following. But the problem is when everybody keeps finding their small following, it's hard to crack through the mainstream now with rock. And it's great that there's bands like I think Slipknot's a great example. Korn also is a great example.
Yep.
Bands like, young people go to see them because they still got it some way. And I always hate to.
Well, look at like Dirty Honey. It's a young band without a major label record deal, you know? Greta Van Fleet.
They were on the show. Dirty Honey was on the show. They're great. They're phenomenal bands. There are bands that still do it, but I don't see, and I'm not saying this to be an asshole, a Dirty Honey or any of these other bands selling multiple nights out in an arena like Guns N' Roses would do in 91. You know, that's just not. I don't know if, I mean, also, I don't know if any band's going to ever do that again because the universe just got crazy segmented and where you have your own little hardcore audience and it doesn't go past that. I don't know. Who knows? I mean,
I agree with you. I think it is a long shot, but I do think it's possible possible, because both times that I saw that change, I didn't think it was possible either. And, and it did change. And, you know, what's interesting is you look at all the top touring acts every single year and they're classic rock guitar based bands. Is that insane?
Yeah, it is crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But what is it because every riff's just been done? Like, what, I got to remember, to use Guns N' Roses as an example, I remember what I knew Welcome to the Jungle from. It didn't even take the song becoming a hit. I went to the movie theater to see Dirty Harry, the Deadpool, and it was featured in that with Jim Carrey lip singing it, of all things. And he was playing the rock star that was singing that song. And it was just like immediately... You had to hear that, you know, that echoey beginning part of the song. You're like, I have to hear. I just don't hear in fantastic young bands. Crowbots, another young band that I think are great. But I mean, like, I'm just like, I don't hear the riff that I'm like, this is a riff that the world will know the second it plays.
We'll want, not we'll know, we'll want to know. I mean, there's great. Like, Wilson's another great one that writes really hooky songs, you know, but you're right. I don't know. I don't know. I would love to see it happen as we're all rock fans here right now, but it just... And then I just feel like I'm just an old crotchety man complaining.
Well, I always say it's a simple thing, and I tell my daughter this all the time. A good song is a good song, and it doesn't matter what year. If I sat here and I played you this song, imagine all the people, you know, it's a great song on acoustic piano. It doesn't matter. If somebody wrote a song like that now, it would be a hit. It doesn't have to have pinball machine sounds in it and stuff. So it just it still will have to come from an artist. Some artist will have to step out and be that person. So we'll see. And
there's also, I think, an issue now. It's not, it is a good thing. It just, none of it seems to be leaning back to rock, but there is that thing. It's why I said I always enjoyed Kid Rock, because he was a person that kind of represented, like, oh yeah, me too. I grew up with classic rock, you know, the birth and like growth of hip hop.
Yeah.
Metal. You know what I mean? Like, when I'd go to CD stores, it would be to buy like Guns N' Roses and NWA and, you know, and Wu-Tang Clan and whatever metal albums at the time. So, like, I think with that crossover, like, you have a guy like Post Malone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I've actually played with Post Malone before. Like, played like a live show. Yeah. He can play guitar. He can sing. And he loves all these bands.
Yeah. And he's a rock star, if it makes sense. But it's like, it's so genre bending.
Yeah.
In every way that it's like, who's the person, like, you know, who's the metal band? Who's the next, you know, the people that are just doing something to catch on, like a Slipknot or something.
But even like Kid Rock, it's a hybrid, you know, it's a hybrid of rock, country and rap. And that's okay. We'll take a hybrid of something just as long as it's guitar dominant is what I think is important.
As long as there's some rock in there. I thought Falling in Reverse was one of the bands that did a good job this year with that song Monster. They really blew up and they were genre bending.
Also, actually, what I think's pretty impressive and happens when I saw, when I did Bonnaroo and Kendrick Lamar it's a live band, man. They're a really, really good band. And I'm from Philly. And when I started doing comedy, the house band for a lot of things I did were the Roots. And you see guys like,
oh, wow. Yeah.
That's like just an amazing talent. And those are guys also were fans of everything.
You know what I mean? Like, but you write most of your songs on acoustic guitar because you believe if you can play it on acoustic and it sounds good on acoustic, it'll sound good anyway.
I do. I really believe in that simplest thing of, you know, acoustic guitar, piano. It's just my approach. Nowadays, you know, they're looking for sounds. It, you know, the hit comes from the hook in a sound, you know, which, I, like I said, that's so foreign to me. I don't understand it. So I'm going to stick to the guitar and the piano. And I'll just do the best that I can.
And speaking, it was a great segue, Jay. What song are you going to do for us?
I don't know. I'm trying to think about that.
It'd be so great if it was an EDM song. Like, all right, guys, fuck this thing.
Start the loop now. All right, let me do something, Ralph. Let me think. You know what? It's funny you brought this up. You brought Kill for Thrills. I'm going to do a Kill for Thrills song. Is that okay?
Hell yeah.
You probably want to. Monsters, I ain't afraid of the dark. I never was scared.
to see the rats in the ashtray perfume still in the air.
Thank you so much. It's awesome.
Ralph, do you do the same thing I do? I just stare at your left hand and go, it's fucking impossible.
You know what's funny? I'm going to ask you, because I just bought this today, and I'm curious your thoughts on it, because I'm a terrible guitarist, right? The number one reason, I believe, is because I'm also left-handed, but I was taught right-handed.
Ralph, so- do me a favor. I just need you to change a sentence to, I'm not a guitarist at all.
Well,
so you're a terrible guitarist. Still implies that you're a guitarist.
No, but it means like, so
you're not a guitarist. That's not anywhere. That would be 75 things down your business card.
Right. Guitarist. Well, then what's the word to say that I can somewhat play a few songs and I have a guitar?
It means you can't play guitar. I have a guitar sitting
more,
right there.
But I can play
goddamn. It's got an inch and a half of dust on it. I don't understand how it works.
I know bar chords. I know every major. I know enough. I don't know where you could say.
Hey man, the Ramones made a career out of two fingers.
And Ralph can't do that.
Do some of that.
And I'm telling you, don't you dare ever. I'm gonna listen. It's almost Thanksgiving. You want to call yourself a guitarist?
No, kill me. I don't know what I would call myself other than I have a guitar.
You own a guitar. You're a guitar owner.
All right, hold on. Okay, shut up, kid. Before I smack you. I have a guitar and I want to get better at it, right? Yeah. Can I say it that way, Jay? Is that all right?
Yeah. You can, but unfortunately, you're 50, dude.
So I bought this thing, Gilby.
Okay.
That's like to teach you guitar. It's a mini, like fretboard.
And oh, I heard about those.
They're
yeah,
supposed to be fingers. Revolutionary. Yeah. Do you know anything about them? You have no instant.
No. But I got to tell you, I have to, every now and then we do these corporate gigs, like myself, Matt Sorum, and Glenn Hughes, and we do these. So we have to kind of learn a catalog of other people's material. We just did a bunch with Dee Snider and Sebastian Bach.
Oh, cool.
So we had to learn other people's material. I never played in a cover band. I really went from, you know, Hollywood Streets to a band. So YouTube now is insane, man. There are so many tutorials of guys, you know, showing you the song.
Right.
Usually what I have to do is I watch three different ones because they're not always on the same page. or you know, they start and it just kind of helps me for that first 15 minutes to kind of get an idea of it. But I think YouTube is a fantastic way.
Use YouTube to try and learn some songs sometimes.
Quick question, Gilby. What are your feelings about Sebastian Bach? How'd it work out? Good? Good dude?
What my feelings about Sebastian?
Yeah, Sebastian's
hilarious, man. You know, here's the thing about Baz. He really is exactly what you see is exactly who he is. Like he's not putting on an act. Like he really, but everything he says comes out of his mouth. He believes. Like he is that dude. Like he's that young kid that's a big music fan. You know, his idea is right or wrong. He lives it and he believes it every day. To me, that's a person that's honest with himself, and that's a rarity.
He walked off of this show because I made a gay joke. I made a gay joke about Rob Halford. Same joke that made Rob Halford laugh out loud, in fact.
Well, once again, you know, he takes rock music stuff very, very seriously. So, I mean, I'm not going to defend him or defend you, but, you know,
he is a real dude, man.
He, whatever, like I said, whatever he says, he believes.
I believe he hates me. It's bothered me ever since.
What fun is it if everybody loves you, man? You know, life isn't right.
I hear you. You know what? Damn, that's a really great way to look at it.
It's an eating away at Jay for months.
I hate when people hate me, especially when they hate me and you're like, dude, there's no reason for you to hate me. Like, I was so excited to interview him.
Anyway, also, I noticed, Gilby, you've always been a motorcycle dude, but now you have a motorcycle shop in your house and you're building one for George Lynch.
Yeah, I am. I've been building it. Actually, I thought I'd be done with it a lot sooner, but the COVID thing, it's impossible to get parts nowadays. Yeah, I've been building a bike for George Lynch. It's a O2 Softail that I stripped down, and I've made so many parts. I made the handlebars, I made the exhaust pipes, I made the pegs, rebuilt, you know, everything, the motor, the tires, wheels, everything. But it's going to be a badass bike when it's done.
That's pretty cool. Do you build bikes for other musicians often, or is this a first?
I think George is, I built probably about 6 bikes total. I think this is the first one I did it for like a musician friend, but I've done, other friends, and, you know, it's not a professional. Like I don't do it to make money. It's just a hobby that keeps me busy during all this.
Here's a question. Are you charging him parts only or parts labor?
No, he's got a little bit of labor in that bill too.
Tommy has to give you the publishing, the Dream Warriors.
And now the label that you're on now for the new album Gospel Truth is Golden Robot. And I went and looked them up, and they're doing like a lot of the old school rock guys. I saw Little Caesars on there. LA Guns is on there. Rose Tattoo is on there. Are they like the new Spitfire, the new, like those labels that are bringing out the old school rock? Is that who they are? Like, what's
behind that? Almost exactly that. You know, when I first talked to the owner, Mark, quite a few years ago, actually, that's when he said, he goes, look, I love music. He goes, you know, this is something, he has a son that's in his early 20s. He goes, you know, I want to help my son in his career and stuff. And I see bands like Rose Tattoo or Skid Row and these bands that don't have deals. He goes, and I want to get these out there. So he's learned a lot about music in that very short 4 or 5 year period, but the label's definitely getting some traction now.
That's cool. Yeah. I saw some great lineup. It was cool to see. Now, obviously COVID changed everything for you. Yep. Was there a plan for everybody? Is there, when the album comes out next year, the theory, I would assume, is to tour on it, or just wait and see what happens, or what?
I think it's a little bit of both right now. I mean, we're in conversations about doing some dates in Australia, Japan, and New Zealand, because they are open, you know, and things are moving along a little faster. But I'm still in the wait and see right now. It's just, it's such a delicate time right now. I mean, you know, we're really talking about our health here. So we're going to wait and see. You know, without this record would have came out, you know, I think it was in March was the schedule. So it's a little disappointing, you know, to have to wait.
Right, for everybody. And then also a couple other quick things. I watched the interview that you did with Ryan Roxy.
Oh, my buddy, Ryan.
He's just a great guy. You know, I was a big fan of his, with like him and Carrie Kelly were in a band called Dad's Porno Mag. That was a great.
Yeah, I produced the first record.
Oh, that's great. That's a great record. That was a great record. They came in to perform that. We're just watching because you two were in Candy together. And you were talking about a time which was just so like foreshadowing event that you're in Candy and you went to see LA Guns and Guns N' Roses. When you were just starting here, just such a crazy, who the fuck would know you'd be in Guns N' Roses 5 years later, whatever it was, 10 years later.
I know. Isn't that odd? You know, because I saw Guns N' Roses, I think it was their first gig. I think it was the Whiskey or the Trooper. I don't really remember, but I saw him so many times. But I went to see Guns N' Roses because it was Izzy's band. I was friends with Izzy, you know, and it was, let's see Izzy's new band. But we were also on the road a lot during that, so I missed a lot of things. Like when, you know, I saw Poison when they first moved to L.A. And then when I came off tour, it's like they were like the biggest L.A. band. They were headlining every venue. It's a very, very strange time.
Within your time in Guns N' Roses, was that when, man, that's the funny. There's a guy who does a YouTube series, I'll give him a plug, called Rock and Roll True Stories, and it's not really opinion based, it's just like the facts of stuff that happened. Axl Rose and was it Brett Michaels, who was it, Axl Rose and Brett Michaels, that were like saying they were gonna like fight each other
No, I think that was Axel and Vince Neil.
And they were like, let's do it in an arena. Like, what?
Yeah, I wasn't in the band at that time, but I mean, that, you know, that stuff was silly back then.
Also to picture these two guys tying their hair back and putting on gloves. Everyone's like so skinny and stuff. Like, it's not really, it wasn't a tough guy world. Like, the cool of rock and roll wasn't necessarily tough. It was like just being awesome and like so larger than life.
Yeah, I think back then they were just looking for any little window, you know, to kind of get some, you know, publicity out of
sure.
it.
Sure.
Hilarious. All right, we're gonna do the first now, Gilby.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
We end the show every week by asking every guest their first experience with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We start with rock and roll, and we ask you the first concert you ever saw. But it's got to be a band that we're going to know, and one you went on your own volition, like your parents didn't drag you, like a band you wanted to see, like the first band you went to.
Well, my first show that I ever went to, actually, I can't say my parents dragged me, but my father did go with me. I went to see Kiss. It was on the Destroyer tour. It was in Ohio, in Cleveland. And my father took me because, you know, I was young. And we went there, and right as we get there, our tickets were up in the nosebleeds, and you know, there were scalpers out front. Hey, you know, 10th row, whatever. And my dad looked at me and he goes, "You want to sit closer?" And I'm like, "Hell yeah." So I actually sat in like the 10th row, like center, while my dad sat in the nosebleeds and watched the show. And look, even though at that point I was young, I was already partying and stuff. But what I remember was the smell of weed and getting past joints, like back and forth from both sides, sitting down watching the show. But Kiss was my first show.
I mean, we say it all the time. I think without Kiss, like 80% of the bands we brought on this show probably wouldn't exist. It's amazing how many people, that's the band that got them into being musicians.
Yeah.
Is that, were you already playing at that point, or did that get you?
I mean, I was playing guitar, but I wasn't, you know, obviously a professional. I was still in Ohio and just learning to play guitar.
Right. Isn't it so funny too? And I'm not even saying this is I'm a Kiss fan myself. Just saw them this last year. They were fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, even it's almost their own admission, like, we are nothing about the music. It's completely, it's like almost no passion for music itself, and just more of the presentation of the show. So it's amazing how much rock they inspired from people who are like musicians. You know what I mean? Like,
when I was young, you know, it was interesting is, you know, there, I had friends that were like diehard, like Led Zeppelin fans, you know, and that was a big deal back then because I love Led Zeppelin. We're like my second favorite band. But I had friends like, if you like Led Zeppelin, you can't like Kiss. You know, it's like there was a line right there. And I was like, I like Led Zeppelin. I like Kiss. They go, no. Yeah, Kiss sucks. You know, so there were guys that felt that they sucked. And I got to tell you, I hate that part of Kiss because, you know, as a young kid, I love those songs. Like even now, you like I said, you hear them, you know, in your headphones and you go, I still remember the words and all the riffs still. Yeah. Like it's ingrained in my head. But I do agree with you that it's not so much about the music, you know, which is a shame because I love the music.
Well, yeah, it's not even a dig on them other than I think it's pretty impressive almost still, yet they inspired like a whole culture of like artists, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not a dig. You're basically quoting Gene, so it's not a dig.
Yeah, and I said it really like, and it really takes them more. It's like, again, what I do, I love like the performance too. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of bands who I like music, and then I see them live, and they don't give a show. Do you know what I mean? There is.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I remember in the '90s when grunge was coming in, that was, you know, for us, that was very disconcerting. As you know, people really weren't putting on a show. They didn't care about the show. They were just, you know. Like some looking at their shoelaces.
I said a very interesting thing. I always thought, I think I said this to other people on the show, Ralph, but like going up to Damon Dash, who used to run Rockefeller Records with Jay-Z and all of that. When I was going up there, just kind of side saddling Kevin Hart on stuff, I'd see in the office, Damon Dash was like, and they were getting huge that time. That was when Jay-Z is like the height of their stuff. He had Bon Jovi concert films and Kiss concert and a whole bunch of, and he was like, he said he has those to watch to show guys like rappers how to put on a show, because that was the big problem in rap was they didn't know how to put on a show. It was just gotta go out there and like, and a microphone was very, very boring. So
I always felt like, you know, you wanted to feel mentally exhausted when you went to go see a show. You wanted to be like, wow, that was fucking amazing. All right. So now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed was not your first drug.
Let me think about that. Weed was my first drug. I got into when I first moved to California, acid was going around. Mm-hmm. And that was just one that, I be honest, I was never a weed guy, even though, like, you know, I smoked weed with everybody. So I didn't love it. But man, when I found acid, or acid found me, that definitely opened up my mind. And suddenly I really understood the Beatles' White Album.
How old were you at the point when you
first? Oh, geez, probably like 16. Yeah.
Okay, wow. Yeah. That's cool. It's funny. We had I forget who the band was on the show recently, but he was talking about how his drug was Quaaludes. I'm like, man, you don't hear that. That's a drug that doesn't exist anymore.
714s.
I always was told, though, that I would have loved it.
Yeah, they said it was one of the best.
It was like Quaaludes were like getting drunk. It was more like that kind of high, where, you know, like I said, acid was completely different, you know, or blow or something. But Quaaludes was, like I said, you were like drunk. That's why I didn't like it. It didn't feel good.
Oh, really?
And now the first time you had sex.
First time I had sex, or when you said it earlier, I thought it was like sex rock and roll moment. Can I tell you that one, or you want the first?
You can tell it. Whatever came to your mind, we'll allow it.
All right. There's no rules. Rock and roll.
To do, yeah.
So, the very first show that I played as a professional musician, the first time I got paid to play music, my band played a dance. It was actually at like a hall. It was in Los Angeles. I think it was like Redondo Beach or something. And we were playing three sets. And once again, I was never in a cover band. We were an original band that played the same set three times. And it was a dance. And, you know, we're playing Jimi Hendrix and things like that. And I just remember looking out and, like, you know, kind of thinking, wow, they're, you know, either we really suck or they're not getting it. But the reality was we were too heavy. They wanted a dance band and we were playing like rock and roll as a three piece. But in the first break, we went to take a break. I walked into the dressing room and there was a girl waiting for me and I got my first blowjob.
Oh, that's such a good story. That's why you get into rock and roll.
And at that moment was the lights and the whole thing and rock and roll. All right, I'm going to keep doing this. I think I was like 15 or 16 or something. I was really young.
You may have just changed the format of the show, as I will suggest to Ralph, and I want to say it now so you can have credit on this. I think we have musicians on the show. Mm-hmm. It should be both your first time and also your first like rock star sex experience, where it was just like, oh shit.
I like that idea. I really like that. I'm into it. We'll call it the Gilby question.
Yeah. The Gilby question. What's your first rock star sex? Because that's the thing you're talking. That's exactly what you're talking about. Where you just like, it was effortless. Someone's just like, hey, can I please suck your dick? Like, yes, you can. Yeah. What?
That's also why I think rock stars never got loped in really to the Me Too movement, because they work their way backstage to you and say, hey, can I please do this to you?
Yeah, you got Me Too'd.
Yeah. Well, luckily enough, that those days I was young enough so I didn't have to worry about that age thing, which right. problems later.
Yeah. All right, so the new album, The Gospel Truth, comes out early next year. The newest single that is Tightwad.
With Nikki and Stephen Perkins.
We're going to add that to our playlist, which we add every single week.
Thank you.
Your Instagram is GilbyGTR, right? Am I right?
Correct. Yes. Yes.
And the last question I have I've heard mixed stories on this, and then we'll wrap the show. And not to keep harping on Guns N' Roses, but Axl was the one that fired you, right?
Well, no.
No? Okay.
Damn, bro. What a weird on the way out, huh? Before I let you go.
Slash is the one who came to me, because Slash was my friend, you know, and he said, look, you know, I mean, I don't want to say everything he said, but he just said, look, Axl doesn't want you in the band anymore. Yeah. And he goes, let me just see what's going on. And that was the end, last conversation we ever had about it. And the next week, my check stopped. And that was it.
That's great.
Axl never said a word to me.
I didn't want to bring it up at all, but I just felt like I needed to hear the answer. So just because I've heard mixed reviews over the years. I've always think you're like one of the coolest rock and roll dudes on the planet, dude. You live and breathe rock and roll. I don't think you've ever changed for anybody, which I think is just fucking awesome. You just are a rock.
Thank you, Rob.
Jay, your plugs, please.
BigJComedy.com for all my dates. As of now, keep saying that always. December 11th and 12th, I'll be at the Paramount Theater in Austin, Texas.
Right on.
Tickets available on my website. And besides that, for right now, just listen to my podcast, Six and Jump, Legion of Skanks, and of course, The Bonfire on Sirius XM Comedy Central Radio. Watch my Comedy Central special. I think it's back. I think it's off YouTube now, but you can still buy it. On iTunes, my Netflix half hour special. And I'm also on Cabin with Bert Kreischer, if you want to check that
out. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I heard about that. I follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other show, Good Sugar, that I do with Marcus from Juice Press, comes out every Monday. Jay, I never showed you this. You're either going to love this or you're going to hate this. I think you're going to hate it, but I'm going to show it to you anyway. I put out a book this week. It is called The Ultimate, the 100% Guaranteed Guide to Weight Loss and Fitness. The first page says, Chapter 1, Eat Less. Mm-hmm. Chapter 2, Work Out More. And the rest of the book is blank. It is a great book for a stocking stuffer for Christmas. It has been on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. And Jay, I'm not sure if you love it or hate it. What do you do? Let's go.
Man, it's cool, man.
I knew it is. I knew you'd hate it. I knew you'd hate it. So
It's a gag gift.
My phone's ringing.
He says his orders are coming in already. That's what that is.
Yeah. Well, at these prices are insane.
Gilby, thank you so much for being a part of the show, man.
Right on, Ralph. It was good to see you. Take care, Jay.
Take care, man.
Thanks, buddy.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.